Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. Our National Poetry Month celebrations continue with Indigenous poets Layli Long Soldier, Mark Turcotte, and Tanaya Winder, who read from and discuss the recent book, When the Light of the World Was Subdued, Our Songs Came Through, a Norton anthology of Native Nations poetry. This program took place November 19, 2021, and was recorded live via Zoom. Quick programming note, the work Layli Long Soldier reads is also a visual poem. Video of this program is available on the American Writers Museum's YouTube channel if you are interested in seeing the images that accompany her work. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
We're grateful to all of you for being here and for valuing the past, present, and future of American writing. This program today is the latest in the Jean and John Rowe program series for My America, presented in conjunction with the exhibit of the same name, which can be viewed at our museum on Michigan Avenue when we reopen, or anytime at my-america.org. Some of the first words in the American Writers Museum come from the stories of Native Americans, and we honor their work not just as the beginning of America's story, but as a vital and living part of its present and future. During this Native American Heritage Month, we are celebrating the publication of a new anthology, When the Light of the World Was Subdued, Our Songs Came Through, a collection of Native Nations poetry edited by current U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo. We're joined today to hear readings from that anthology from three of the most talented Native American poets working today. Tanaya Winder, one of the anthology's contributing editors, is a poet, writer, artist, and educator who was raised on the Southern Ute Reservation. She is an enrolled member of the Duckwater Shoshone Tribe. Mark Turcotte, the author of several collections of poetry and recipient of numerous writing fellowships, teaches creative writing as a visiting assistant professor in English at DePaul University here in Chicago. He spent his earliest years on North Dakota's Turtle Mountain Chippewa Reservation and in the migrant camps of the Western United States. Layli Long Soldier is a citizen of the Oglala Lakota Nation. She is a winner of the National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry and a finalist for the National Book Award, and a recipient of a Native Arts and Culture Foundation National Artist Fellowship. I want to say welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us here today.
Good morning, everybody. So grateful to have you all tuning in and joining us. Honored to share space with Layli and Mark. We're so excited to kick this off. We're going to be reading from the anthology. You might not see it well from my virtual background. Some of us might be reading some of our newer work, but we're also going to be sharing other voices from the anthology as well, just so you can hear. We're going to start off with Mark Turcotte. I'm going to read his bio. Again, Anishinaabe from Turtle Mountain Band. Grew up in North Dakota on the Turtle Mountain Reservation and later in Lansing, Michigan. Turcotte won the first Gwendolyn Brooks Open Mic Award, and the Wisconsin Arts Board named him a literary fellow in 1999 and 2003. He has published 4 books of poetry, and his work has appeared in several anthologies. He lives and works in Chicago. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Tanaya. I'm really glad to be here. Hello, Layli. I'm glad to see you. We got to hear each other yesterday, but only didn't get to see each other, so terrific. I'm really pleased to be here. I want to thank Tanaya, first of all, for being our driver behind this get-together. Thanks for thinking of me and including me. It's been sort of a 15-year-long wish of mine to have a chance to read with Layli, because I first met her down at IAIA. And when I think you were just finishing up being a student down there, Layli. I was really excited when I got to meet her, and especially when I got to read her work. It just seems like forever ago. And now look where you're at, you know. And Tanaya is somebody new to me. I don't know Tanaya that well. We've met a couple times. I saw you read at AWM, actually. So I just want to acknowledge that. And thank you for that. So I guess I'll read a couple pieces of the 2 pieces of mine that are in the anthology. And then I was going to recognize another one of the poets in the anthology with another reading. There are 2 poems of mine in the anthology that are from a series from my book, Exploding Chippewas. And I was saying on the radio yesterday, I was wondering why they chose one of these poems, because it's, I don't know, it's always a one. You always wonder why people choose what they choose about your work, you know. The first one is called Battlefield, and it's for my sister, Jackie Sue, who has left us. Back when I used to be Indian, I am standing outside the pool hall with my sister. She, strawberry blonde, stale sweat and beer pours through the open door. A warrior leans on his stick, fingers blue with chalk. Another bends to shoot. His braids brush the green felt, swinging to the beat of the jukebox. We move away. Hank Williams falls again in the back seat of a Cadillac. I look back. A wind off the distant hills lifts my shirt, brings the scent of wounded horses. Burn. Back when I used to be Indian, I am crushing the dance floor, jump boots thumping, Johnny Rotten, Johnny Rotten, red lights, blue bang at my eyes. The white girl watching does not know why, and it doesn't matter. I spin, spin, eat, I don't care, for breakfast, so what, for lunch. She moves to me, her dark gaze, tongue hot on lips. The music is hard, lights louder. She slides low against my hip to hiss, go, go, Geronimo. I stop. All silence. He sits beside the fire at the center of the floor, hands stirring through the ashes, mouth moving in the shape of my name. I turn to reach toward him. Take one step, feel my skin begin to flame away. Both of those pieces are from very distant times in my past. The piece "Burn" is about when I was living in East Lansing, Michigan, with a whole bunch of women in a house, and I would go out dancing with them and dance with all of them all at the same time. When there were punk rock bands coming through town, and I was really tickled that someone decided that they wanted to put that poem in the anthology, because it's kind of special to me, and I don't usually read it very often out loud, you know, at readings and things. And one thing I wanted to do is our colleague and our friend, Heide Erdrich, obviously is included in the anthology, and I thought while I had the chance, I would read her piece from the anthology, but also do a little Indian 101, which is one of the things that often happens with Native writers. I feel like I do this a lot, and other writers that I've talked to do this a lot. We spend a certain amount of our artistic energy responding to stupidity, that's the best way I can put it, to things that have been written by non-Native people about Native people for, you know, several hundred years now. And sometimes it's not on purpose, it's not malicious, but it's often just ill-informed, misrepresentative, it misdefines us. And we often spend a lot of time kind of like reappropriating that stuff and taking back our own stories and telling them in the way we wish. So this is an example that's kind of extreme. In 1961, when John Kennedy was being inaugurated as president, Robert Frost was invited to read at the inauguration. And the story goes that he had a poem written or something written that he was going to say, and he forgot it in the hotel room, but knew this poem off the top of his head. So he read this poem called "The Gift Outright," which, if you put your eyes in Native mode, you'll see why it's an unpleasant experience for Native people. But it was so right there in people's faces. You know, I was a child when this happened, but people have told me over the years that, you know, so many Native people were counting on John Kennedy to be a president for us, you know. But it's called "The Gift Outright" by Robert Frost. The land was ours before we were the lands. She was our land more than 100 years before we were her people. She was ours in Massachusetts, in Virginia, but we were England's, still colonials, possessing what we still were unpossessed by what we now no more possessed. Something we were withholding made us weak until we found out that it was ourselves we were withholding from our land of living, and forthwith found salvation in surrender. Such as we were, we gave ourselves outright. The deed of gift was many deeds of war. To the land vaguely realizing westward, but still unstoried, artless, unenhanced, such as she was, such as she would become. I think that poem was actually from maybe even the 30s, 20s. And Hyde's response, I've always loved this response. It's called The Theft Outright. We were the lands before we were, or the land was ours before we were a land, or this land was our land, it was not your land. We were the land before we were people, loamy roamers rising, so the stories go, of formed clay, spit into with breath reeking soul. What's America but the legend of rock and roll? Red rocks, blood clots bearing boys, blood sands swimming being from women's hands. We originate, originally spontaneous as hemorrhage. Unpossessing of what we still are possessed by what we now no more possess. We were the land before we were people. Dreamy sunbeams where sun don't shine, so the story goes. Or pulled up a hole, clawing past ants and roots. Dene, in documentaries, scoff DNA evidence off. They landed late, but canyon spoke them home. Nomadic Turkish horse tribes, they don't know. What's America but the legend of stop and go? Could be cousins left on the land bridge. Contrary to popular belief, that was a two-way toll. In any case, we'd claim them, give them some place to stay. Such as we were, we gave most things outright. The deed of the theft was many deeds and leases and claim stakes and tenure disputes and moved plat markers stolen still today. We were the land before we were a people, earth divers, her darling mud puppies, so the stories go, or emerging, fully forming from flesh of earth. The land, not the least vaguely, realizing in all four directions, still storied, art-filled, fully enhanced, such as she is, such as she wills us to become. That's Hyde E. Erdrich. Also, Anishinaabe Turtle Mountain Band, I should brag. And I need to mention this little thing, and I'll turn things over. This, you know, someone said to me, well, you know, a lot of this stuff is from a long time ago when people, you know, weren't as woke or aware as they are now. So this idea that Frost is throwing out that this continent was unstoried, artless, is just so insulting, you know, and it is old. But just 10 years ago when I was in Santa Fe, where Lely is, I went to a reading by a rather well-known, very actually successful story writer. And when she came on stage, she said, every time I come to this part of America, I think about how it must have been, I'm paraphrasing here, I think about how it must have been when the original settlers came here to this unstoried place. It was almost the exact same phrasing. And her implication was like, how wonderful to encounter a land where you can be the first ones to make stories there. And I had some students from the Institute of American Indian Arts who were attending that reading, and they sort of got up in unison and like left the room. You know, after they did, you know, I felt so bad for them, and I felt bad for me sitting there too. But anyway, a little lesson. Thanks so much, Tanaya.
Thank you, Mark, for that beautiful reading. And can you just tell us again one more time, what was the poem by Hyde that you read?
It's called The Theft Outright.
Perfect. I know some folks were interested. Thank you so much.
I think it's in her National Monuments book too, you know, but it's in the anthology.
Perfect. So thank you all again. I'm going to, so my name is Tanaya Winder. I'm enrolled in the Duckwater Shoshone Nation. I'm also a Pyramid Lake Paiute, Southern Ute, grew up on the Southern Ute Reservation in Ignacio, Colorado. I have my MFA from the University of New Mexico. I've published two books so far, Words Like Love. It's actually being reprinted by UNM Press for this spring. Right before Valentine's Day, and then a second book called Why Storms Are Named After People and Bullets Remain Nameless. And I'm actually going to start by reading a poem in the anthology by Linda Hogan. I first became introduced to her work during my senior year at Stanford, and we read her memoir, The Woman Who Watches Over the World. And it just blew my mind. And it's what led me to working with youth. And that book in particular led me to doing some of my first Writing to Heal workshops. And so I'm going to read one of her poems from this anthology, and it's called The History of Fire. My mother is a fire beneath stone. My father, lava. My grandmother is a match. My sister, straw. Grandfather is kindling like trees of the world. My brothers are gunpowder. And I am smoke with gray hair, ash with black fingers and palms. I am wind for the fire. My dear one is a jar of burned bones I have saved. This is where our living goes, and still we breathe. And even the dry grass with sun and lightning above it has no choice but to grow and then lie down with no other end in sight. Air is between these words, fanning the flame. So again, that's The History of Fire by Linda Hogan. And just so grateful for her work and words and everybody in this anthology. So I hope you all go out and get it because it's so powerful and it's heavy. Like, it's literally heavy, but it's also emotionally heavy and beautiful as well. So the poems I'm going to read from my anthology, one of these, and I'm really grateful that these two poems are in the anthology, because when this came out, I was like thinking, oh, I'm done. If I never write again, at least I'm in this book with all of these awesome people. But this poem I wrote actually after I lost a dear friend of mine to suicide. And I just want to share it because I know a lot of people are struggling with mental health right now in the quarantine and being isolated. And just to remind people to always reach out for help and to let people know if you need someone to talk to. This is called The Milky Way Escapes My Mouth. Whenever two lips begin to form your name, I cough stars lodge deep within my lungs. They rush from tongue, weighted in dust, words I didn't ask, where are you going? Or notice the blank spaces in your breathing as you slept. They say the more massive the star, the shorter the lifespan. They have greater pressure on their cores. Yours burns so brightly. I should have known you'd collapse, disappear into image, a black hole dissolving trace amounts. I am left stargazing 5 times a day for years, catalog phrases, chart every word, label every facial expression, telescope until my eyes bleed constellations. Even then, I can't navigate my way into understanding light years, how we let darkness slip in. Is it madness to wonder if it ever really happened? You, a shadow never leaving until I inserted continents between us. I lost you in the crevice between night and day. You died while I was sleeping, dreaming of a galaxy far, far away where love eclipses. A rising tide of longing fills my body, bones, the ribs sheltering the cave within me echoing. Each night I open mouth sky wide to swallow stars and sing to the moon a story about the light of two people who continue to cross and uncross in their falling, no matter how unstable in orbit. And so the last piece I'll read is also in this anthology, and you'll hear some of those same phrases like, where did you go? I feel like loss is something I'm always going to be writing about. And this comes from just asking my grandmother. She recently passed away just a couple weeks ago. So I'm honored in any way I can continue to share her memory. But I was trying to learn Shoshone from her and have her teach me phrases. So this poem comes from that experience. It's called Learning to Say I Love You. My favorite conversations are with my grandmother, while she teaches me words in Indian, as she says. I ask, how do you say, where did you go? And where are you going? Questions that layer my tongue in ash, reminding me of fire, the taste. Each time I speak, the slow burn of every loss I have witnessed cracks my lips. go and going, axe singed into my bones, so I ask, teach me, I'm coming with you. So it sits rock heavy in my mouth, because my tongue is at war with history. Boarding school, kill the Indian, save the man. Acts of colonization, strain pronunciation when I want to say, take me with you. It dissolves. Before I can stomach the sweetness of language hours, I am losing. I am lost, lodged somewhere in my throat between decades of broken syllables. Teach me how to reach the ones who are born already running. Teach me how to talk to the ones who need it most. Dear universe, gift me words that linger softly like dusk. There must be a phrase to contain wherever you go, whether or not you know where you've been or where you are going. All right. Thank you. So next I'm going to hand it off to Laylee Longsoldier. I'm so excited to be reading next to Laylee and Mark. The first time I heard Laylee read was actually at a AWP conference. I believe it might have been in Minneapolis, although they all blend together. But I was just in awe. Like, I had never been that viscerally and emotionally inspired by a poet in such a long time. Like, she just rekindled my fire. And I just, that's the only way I can describe it, was just being in awe of her and her gift. So Laylee Longsoldier, Oglala Lakota, received her BFA from the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe and her MFA with honors from Bard College. She published her chapbook, Chromosomery, in 2010, and her 2017 collection, Whereas, won the National Books Critics Circle Award and the Penn John Stein Book Award, and was a finalist for the National Book Award. In 2015, she was awarded a National Artist Fellowship from the Native Arts and Cultures Foundation and a Land and Literary Fellowship for Poetry. Laylee Longsoldier is also an installation artist. Welcome, Laylee.
Thank you for that introduction. I was saying your last name incorrectly for so long, so I'm glad that I'm here and I get to share this time with you and also correct my the way that I'm pronouncing your last name. So, but in any case, I'm happy to be here with both you and Mark. I'm going to, this morning, I'm not going to read the piece that is published in the anthology because it takes about 15, 16 minutes to read. So I'm going to share some other work, which actually, as Tanea mentioned, I am a visual artist as well. So I have some poems that come from some visual work, and I thought I would just share some of that this morning, just for fun, right? Because why not? I'm going to share a couple pieces from an exhibit called Midakoye Oyasin, and this was an exhibit I participated in with two other Lakota artists, and I had two large-scale pieces that measured 12 feet by 12 feet. And basically what I did was I took a, you see this, this is a star quilt pattern, if you guys are familiar with star quilts. And I enlarged the pattern so that each diamond in the pattern measured 1 foot long. And I made poems to go inside each section of the star quilt. So I'm going to share two pieces from one of those star quilts. From that multicolored star quilt, I made 8 poems that come from a short story written by Zinth Kala Shah. So I wanted to honor kind of my literary ancestors, if you will, today. And Zinth Kala Shah was one of the first published Dakota writers, a Dakota woman writer. Isn't she beautiful? And I used a piece titled The Widespread Enigma Concerning Blue Star Woman that she wrote. And what I did was I separated out parts of speech from that short story. And what I found by stripping away the particulars of the story, some of the particulars of that era, is that many of the issues that she was writing about at the time remain the same today. And many of much of the language that she used to write about issues of identity, land, resistance, and so forth, were the same as today. And it was really eye-opening for me, both for looking outward, but also looking at our own community and the language that we use with each other for certain issues. So here we go. I'm going to share that. That was a long explanation. Okay. You ready? So you'll see the diamond shape here. This is what is in each diamond. And it becomes a piece that the viewer can make their own poem depending on which direction they go in. So I'm going to read this. Who am I? Was no longer the obsessing riddle of her life. The morning taught deep abstraction. I am a being in its center, an answer to who were your parents? Who am I? Was no longer the persistent question her inquiry prompted deep abstraction. I am a being in its center, an answer to who were your parents? Who am I was no longer the persistent question, unwritten law held deep abstraction. I am blue star woman in its center, an answer to who were your parents? Who am I had become proof of membership in the tribe. Unwritten law required deep abstraction. I am blue star woman. Be that as it may, the government means who were your parents. Who am I had become proof of membership in the tribe. The white man's law disregarded deep abstraction. A piece of earth is my birthright. Be that as it may, the government means who were your parents. The fact was, the circumstances of her early childhood were matters of dispute, as the sharpened names from her tribe boiled like black smoke and coffee, fire between her and her heritage. The fact was, circumstances of her family tree were unrecorded, as the speared names from her tribe boiled like smoke blackened coffee, fire between her and her heritage. The fact was, verbal reports about her family tree were contradictory, as the lifted names of her memories boiled like smoke-blackened coffee, fire between her and her heritage. The fact was, verbal reports about old, old teachings were contradictory, as the added names of the dead boiled like the hot bread's tsing, fire between her and her heritage. The fact was, verbal reports about old, old teachings were of far greater importance, as the roused names of the dead boiled like the hot bread's tsing, fire between her and her heritage. Thank you. I hope that was okay and it wasn't too long.
That was amazing.
Okay. I don't know if there's time. I think we were asked to share a poem written by someone else in the anthology. Should I do that?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. I'll close the whole thing with a piece by a friend. And I wanted to read his poem. This is a poet that we lost this year who passed away a few months ago, Brian Bearhart. In the anthology, he is listed as B. William Bearhart. And so I wanted to read this in honor and in gratitude for all that he gave us as a poet and as a friend. This is titled, "When I Was in Las Vegas and Saw a Warhol Painting of Geronimo. I thought we could be related, Andy and I. We're both blue walls and yellow cows in a gallery of pristine white. We're both screen prints, offset and layered, underexposed. We're both silver clouds filled with helium and polluted rain. We're both white and blonde and scared of hospitals. Only I'm not really any of those things. And then I thought we could be related, Geronimo and I. We're both code names for assassinations. We're both first names you yell when you jump from a plane. We're both gamblers and dead and neon acrylic brush strokes on a screen printed image. Only I'm more like a neon beer sign sputtering in the tavern window, burned out, broke, a heart with arrhythmic beats."
Thank you so much, Layli. Carrie, did you want to come back on?
First, I just wanted to thank all three of you. Those were amazing pieces, and this is wonderful to hear, and this is an amazing anthology. What inspired each of you to become poets?
Necessity.
I have heard that answer before.
Yeah. I think the first time that I read Itsy Bitsy Spider, I knew I wanted to be a poet. That's where it started, in a little reader book on the res in North Dakota.
Danaya?
Ooh, I don't know. I like the necessity answer. I feel like only now can I confidently be like, I'm a poet. But I think just been inspired. I think just, again, just needing to process, needing an outlet, needing to be able to transform things into something beautiful.
Layli, how about you?
I'm going to sound so unoriginal, but probably necessity too. I started studying poetry at the Institute of American Indian Arts because they did not have a music program. When I was younger, I played music, and that's what I wanted to do. But I also wanted to go to school there, and I went to enroll, and they didn't have a music program. So I kind of shrugged my shoulders. I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll try writing. And then, but somehow, the beautiful thing is I found, you know, as I started studying, I found I had abilities that I didn't know I had. For example, I didn't know critical thinking was a thing. Like, it was like, what? All these crazy things I've been thinking about and, like, you know, that maybe bother me sometimes or, you know, issues that mean something to me or whatever, that they had a place, and they had a place in the writing world, in poetry and so on. So that was pretty exciting. Yeah.
Awesome. This question's a little deeper. I'll start with you, Layli, and then we'll work around. The attendee has asked, he or she says they're fascinated by the embodiment of ancestral memory and painful history through poetry. How much does research play a part in weaving into your poems? How much of it comes from feeling one's way through the poem, through what you already know about your own history?
Well, you know, the thing with embodying history, for me, I think, you know, this idea of ancestral memory or what have you, I think that we can't always know actually what is embodied. At least I don't think I can know that for certain, right? And even if I'm operating based on that memory contained in my DNA or certain things are being expressed or come out, I can't be sure. I don't really know that myself. So in fact, a lot of my work maybe that deals with history does require quite a bit of research. And research does not just mean turning to books and the documents. It means also turning to family and community members and so on. And one thing I have learned is that in researching and in working with history or what have you, there are so many different tellings and so many different perspectives. So I have to always, and there's a lot of decision making in that as artists, like what perspective, what version are you going to work with, you know? So that was a long answer. I'll allow the other people to.
Tanaya, do you have a response to the question on research versus your own personal experience?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, it's different for everybody, just like everybody's healing journey is different or grieving journey is different. Like, you know what you need. And I would say the same thing happens when you're writing about, or for me, when I'm writing about like history or things my people or my personal family has gone through. Sometimes, like Layli said, it's just talking to other people, maybe talking to elders from my community. But sometimes it could be researching. Like right now, I'm reading a bunch of books about Sarah Winnemucca from my tribe on my Paiute side, and I'm just learning so much. And, you know, I don't know if those will turn into poems. Maybe they will, but it's just, I kind of just go in the direction I feel called or pulled to, and I hope I'm being guided in the right way.
Okay. Mark, any different thoughts?
Yeah. All of my research is accidental. stuff that I discover when I'm trying to please myself with readings or learn things myself. Sometimes they end up in my work, but I tend to be one of those writers who I'm very careful about speaking for anybody else. I have a difficult enough time embodying my own work, let alone trying to embody a culture or a history. I hear a lot of voices. It always irritates me when poets talk about all the voices that are speaking through them into their poems. And I don't have that luxury, and I don't really know if anybody does. But for me, it's just voices who are just speaking to me and reminding me of who I am and what I need to know about myself. I hope when I'm at my best, you know, that's what's going on. And I hope that ends up in my work, you know. And sometimes, you know, like even the Bearheart piece there, you know, there's this quick mention of Geronimo, and right away, probably the three of us as Native people, Native writers know that Bearheart is referencing the fact that Geronimo was the code name that the Bush administration and the Obama administration used for Osama bin Laden. So one of our great cultural heroes, Geronimo, was insulted in that way by, you know, being used as a code name for America's so-called worst enemy, you know, and that sort of makes you feel very unwelcome. You know, it doesn't take long for you to figure out what your country thinks of you, your supposed country thinks of you when they do that to your.
Yeah, I don't want to like pile on and start a whole complain fest, but I will say what you said reminds me kind of the recent CNN election polls referring to all of our over 500 and something First Nations people, right. Tribal nations as something else. Literally, they typed out something else referring to our contribution, our voting in the election. And so what it is was an indication of what the mainstream media and probably many in this country still think, how they regard Native people. Yeah.
Absolutely. And people don't see that unless they're us. Mm-hmm. And by us, I don't mean just we three, but, those who have our shared sort of experience, I guess, memory.
The a question about from Susan Neal, who was wondering from each of you, and Tanae, if you want to start off, in this anthology, were there any new writers or poems that you discovered, or anything that stuck out to you that wasn't something that you knew before that interested you?
Yeah, I definitely discovered a lot of new poets. Thankfully, with social media, I feel like now I'm able to see more, people can share more. But my high school, they didn't really expose us to a lot. I think we read Bless Me Ultima and one Shakespeare book, and we just did like crosswords and found things like that. It's not challenging. And then Stanford was very much like not diverse in my English department as well at the time. So it was only in grad school that I started actually finding Native literature and like doing research myself. So I think this anthology, for anybody just wanting to get to know more about Indigenous poets, it's an amazing resource.
My turn? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. By the way, that's my sweetheart, my wife, asking that brilliant question. thanks, honey. Who's probably on the other side of this wall, listening, giggling maybe. One of the beautiful things about this book is that the way it's arranged by areas. So like, I think I'm in the, I and Laylee, I think, are in the Plains Mountains section. And then the poems in each section are laid out by the chronology of the births of the writers. So it starts with older stuff, often some traditional stuff like songs or poems written by anonymous Native people at the boarding schools or something. I mean, it's really amazing. Like I could hardly turn a page without discovering something I'd never seen before. But I really found that as I moved forward in time to all the younger poets, I know it in my mind that there's a lot of young Native writers right now, like more than ever, that it's just this amazing pulsing thing that's happening in our world. But I had no idea how many of them and how really skilled and accomplished they are, above and beyond, their years. So for me, that's been the biggest fun, is discovering all those young writers that I sort of knew about, that I've seen here and there, lurking around in the backs of rooms and stuff, So that's been a thrill for me.
Yeah. Laylee, is there anybody that you've discovered in this anthology that you had not seen before that you were intrigued by or inspired by?
Well, can I be honest? I was one of the editors for the So in our discussions, I want to say I was involved early in the process, and then because of time limitations and so on, I could not get into some of the nitty-gritty that the other editors took on as it progressed. So, but I was part of the early discussions and looking at the various writers. So I'll be honest, I was already familiar with many of the writers by the time the book was published. But I do appreciate what Mark mentioned about how the book is organized by regions. And there really were poems that I'm familiar with the writers, but I wasn't familiar with all of their work. And so there were some surprising poems. For example, the piece I read today by Brian Bearhart and many others. So, yeah.
Okay. Next question from Jeremy Carnes. You discussed, Laylee, a little bit about literary ancestors like Sikala Shah, and what Jeremy wanted to know was, who are some of your other literary ancestors that you find yourself returning to over the years as you continue working?
Well, I mean, this is going to sound like I'm just plugging this book so much, but you know, I will say a lot of my literary ancestors are in this book. And I would say a lot of them are Native writers. And the reason that I continue to return to a lot of those people, for example, I mean, they're not that much older, I would say. But, you know, for example, Joy Harjo, Simon Ortiz, Leslie Marmon Sokol, some of those of just maybe even one generation before mine. But I return to a lot of those writers because I often find, just like Zintkala Shah, the short story that I took, made a poem from, I find that they are dealing, even back then, were dealing with many of the same issues that I am thinking about now. But my job as an artist is to do things differently, you know, to refresh it. So a lot of issues such as identity or land or what have you, rights, sovereignty, those are very old. You know, I didn't invent those things to write about, but I like to turn back and think about how my literary ancestors, my literary family has written about them before. And I want to do something, maybe tilt it or shift it a bit. Yeah.
Okay. Mark, any thoughts?
Yeah, sure. I mean, everyone that Layli just named. And we're, because sometimes we're kind of a small community, we have lots of opportunities to meet each other and run into each other out in the world. And sometimes that has been even more nourishing, you know, than running into people's work. It's always wonderful when you find out that, you know, a poem you admire by a poet that you admire turns out to be a person you admire. That's always a good thing. And, you know, if I want to get all, you know, up in the hills, Turtle Mountain on everybody, you know, all these young people are my literary ancestors too. We just don't know it yet, you know. So they're all, you know, I think we're all just kind of feeding each other, you know. To be explicit, a lot of Native writers I know have quoted this line by Adrian C. Lewis from his poem, Elegy for the Forgotten Oldsmobile, 80s poem, I think. And somewhere in the middle of the poem, there's this line, I'm in the reservation of my mind. And that line, I ran into it much later after people mentioned it to me. And I could see why it just opened doors for people, that line. And for myself, I have a little line I should mention. Also no longer with us, Jim Northrup, the wonderful Anishinaabe poet. The last line of one of his poems is, that's when I realized that surviving the peace was up to me. And that line, as simple as it is, has just always stayed with me and struck me deeply. In almost every moment of my life, that line kind of echoes in the back of my mind. It's up to me, you know, surviving the peace is up to me. So that's how it happens for me. And it's not just Native writers, of course, but since that's what we're focusing on today, let's give them the shout out, right? And Layli, you know, both of these women just inspired me right now. So.
Oh. Today, how about yourself?
Yeah, I also agree that everybody in the book, Joy Harjo has just been an amazing mentor and light. And I would say also Sarah Winnemucca and my grandma and my mom, you know, just listening to them tell stories, and they're not going to be published or in anthologies, but they're like our elders are the original storytellers, you know. And I think just listening to them and taking that in, I think is, I consider that like my inspiration.
That's great. And I want to start with you, Tanae, on the next question. It comes from Seema Kirup. And it was a question about craft, and it kind of goes back to one of the poems that you read early on. Have any and all of you found an impulse to weave Indigenous language into your poems? Language preservation seems to be one of the most pressing issues facing Native American communities. So this person was wondering how you've used it or think to use it.
Yeah, so I'm still trying to learn my languages. I have phrases in one of my poems that's online using like a Ute dictionary that my community came up with. And some of them like have apps now. I know for Shoshone, there's an online dictionary where you can hear like the phrases. I just am trying to use words in my poems, but it's like a struggle because again, like not as confident in, I don't always know the pronunciation if I'm just reading from a dictionary. And with those things for me, I always feel like I have to kind of get approval to do it. So I often like share it with the elders first to see if it's okay. I know one of my songs, I have a phrase tutaveak, which means it's a good day in the Ute language. And so, one of the elders taught me how to say it and I showed him my song and just like ask, are these things okay? You know, and I think I will keep doing that just to help me learn the language, but it's always a decision, like if I want to like put it out there.
How about you, Mark?
I don't have much to add to that. You know, I'm one of those people who as a child, I'm told, I don't remember it very well. You know, I was learning Anishinaabe Mo'in and some hybrid languages of French and Anishinaabe Mo'in. But when I had to leave the reservation as a child, I lost those things. So, but they sure sound familiar whenever I hear them spoken, you know, and I sometimes wonder if people don't talk to me in those languages, you know, in my sleep, because they sure sound familiar. It's one of my great, great sadnesses is that I was taken away from those opportunities and my brain is just too old now to learn them.
Layli, how about you?
Well, I will say my relationship or my way of working with Native language has changed over the years. And that's okay because I change. We all change as we get older and continue in our field in writing and making poems and making art. So when I was younger, even in my book, I have some poems, some pieces that will have that where I use certain phrases or words. And when I was younger, I did that because I wanted to feel closer to Lakota language. I wanted to use it in interesting or new ways or maybe meditate on it, I suppose. But these days I realize even just visually looking at one word sort of isolated on a page or surrounded by English, I had to step back just for me and think, oh, what am I doing? Like just even conceptually, what am I doing to our language? You know, I felt I felt sad for those little words all by themselves. So, you know, I mean, just, I don't know. I picture them as like little people, you know? So, but I will say this, I've started like this weekend, actually, I'm teaching a Lakota language and a poetry workshop with one of my aunts, my auntie Tilda. And so what we're doing is we're teaching how to speak or write four simple sentences, sentence structures for present tense first person. And then we will teach the students how to combine those sentences in surprising ways to make a poem. So the point of that is we're hoping each student can leave the class with one poem written 100% in Lakota language. And the reason, and the point of that is to also encourage myself and other learners to realize that you do not have to be completely fluent in order to make something beautiful. So as poets, we're not completely fluent, I would say, in all of English language or all of poetry. And we still make interesting things, right? So I think that we're interested in doing that with our young people, with our community as well.
That's a wonderful answer. And I think it's going to lead into, because we're hitting the hour mark, a last question from Ruben Avila Rodriguez, who really just wanted to know what advice each of you might give to young writers who want to write literature as you are.
Read. Read voraciously.
Danae, any thoughts?
I agree. And I used to hate it when people gave me that answer. Like, well, you have to read. I'm like, oh, but I just want to do it. I just want to write. But it's right. I agree with Mark. Reading, I think, just helps you learn what's been done to see what's possible, like, and get inspiration and do what Layli was talking about, like figure out how you're going to build on it. How are you going to do something different? But so I would say read and also just practice writing, because I think a lot of young people just have so much to say, and it's good to just practice getting it out there, practice your craft, practice revising.
That's great. Layli, any advice for the young authors out there beyond the workshop that you're doing and the work?
Of course, I would agree with Tanea and Mark, but maybe to add something new, I would say also just cultivate an appreciation for language itself. As an art, that is your primary material. As in poetry, your primary material is language. Just as if you were a painter, it would be paint and canvas and brushes. Your material as a writer is language. So get a little, a journal. Have a journal or piece of paper with you always, and collect language that you hear, language that you encounter, interesting words, phrases, and write them down. Cultivate that. Don't just rely on yourself and your little tiny dictionary that you have inside of you. Develop that relationship with your material and collect it, and then come to the page and use some of that, you know, and make it fun, exciting.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I want to thank all three of you for being with us here today, for reading your own works, for reading other people's works, for answering our visitors' questions. We really appreciate this and all that you do for the art of writing and for our culture and our country. So we appreciate that very much. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks. See you later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, our National Poetry Month celebrations continue with acclaimed poets Rigoberto Gonzalez and Yohani Baquez Paz. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.